This is Twit.
In December, we talked about our concerns about Facebook's new messaging app for kids. Now, a group of 100 pediatricians, psychiatrists, educators, and other experts have sent a letter to Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg urging him to discontinue the Messenger Kids app. One of the experts who signed that letter is Dr. Jenny Radesky, a developmental behavioral pediatrician and lead author of the latest guidelines on media and young minds from the American Academy of Pediatrics. Welcome to the show, Jenny.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I know that they talk to a lot of experts. They claim to talk to a lot of experts, Facebook did, about Messenger Kids. I'm assuming you were not one of those experts. We're learning now that some of those experts were actually paid by Facebook in different ways. What do you think is the biggest risk for kids and Messenger Kids?
I think what the group of health experts and early childhood experts who signed that letter, I think one of the biggest concerns was just that, is this even necessary? You know, there's enough concerns about the way social media interacts with children's early mental health problems, about the way children interact inappropriately over social media, that really we shouldn't be charging ahead to lower the age at which children start to use social media. We should really be taking a more cautious approach to optimize the use of social media in older kids. And then, you know, for those kids that Facebook says it was trying to help, those like 11 and 12 year olds who are already on Snapchat or already using Instagram or other social media tools, you know, then maybe start the discussion of helping them enter the social media world in a healthier way. The idea that a 6 year old or a 7 or 8 or 9 or even 10 year old is ready to start interacting in a mediated space, you know, over a screen, over text messages it interrupts some of the natural abilities to read each other's nonverbal cues, to know when you've upset someone else, to know when you've crossed a line. That sort of messiness is just so much more likely when you're still immature socially and you still don't even have a well-developed sense of who you are as a person yet at those young ages.
I feel like, obviously this is a hyper technologically driven world that we're living in, more increasingly so. I feel like when we were kids, computers were kind of an interesting thing that some people do. Now we're like surrounded by them, and as adults, our lives depend on them. And so then that transfers to our children, to the kids that watch us interact with technology. Is there, just as playing the devil's advocate, is there any reason to think that by not exposing kids at a young age to technology, that we're not setting them up for success in a world that is driven by it?
I think lots of parents that I've talked to, especially parents from low-income communities, a lot of the parents of my patients, they worry that they're putting their child at a disadvantage by not introducing media at a young age. So one of the things we tried to say in the new American Academy of Pediatrics guidelines was, do not worry that your child would be left behind if you don't buy them an iPad when they're 1 or 2 or, you know, in that young early childhood age range. So much of computer use or media use is not about how much you can swipe and tap and download and play apps. It's really how you think constructively about how should I use this as a tool? How do I use this to create something that's my mind is making up what I should be doing. I'm not just following what the app developer wants my mind to be doing.
Yeah, right.
So when we're talking about early childhood, like 0 to 5, which was what our AAP guidelines were for, we really wanted to help decrease the hype that parents might feel about, oh my gosh, I've got to introduce this early so my kid can keep up. Now, when it comes to a school-age child whose brain development is ready to start interacting more meaningfully with media, like my 8-year-old does some really cool coding games. He has worked on some early like word processing to write stories, to, you know, connect and learn new facts from the internet. That's an age when there's so much potential to start using media and computers as a tool for learning and creation. But social media and video chatting is just not that platform, I think, for learning most of the things kids need to learn at those ages. You know, if we want to talk about digital citizenship and what it means to be part of this now hyper-connected community, I don't think that just doing like silly faces with cat filters on them, and, you know, lots of emojis is the way to teach that. I think I've had conversations with the Facebook group that developed Messenger Kids, you know, since our letter came out. They're eager to hear some feedback. They, you know, and I've said some of these concerns to them that, like, is this really the platform to teach some of these skills? Why don't you kind of rethink it? And, you know, the letter did say, please pull it back, rethink it, and, you know, maybe introduce something else if it's really good. But we really did want them to elicit more feedback from more of us, not just the few researchers that they had interacted with before, you know, that they had funded, but that they had existing relationships with.
So I know with drugs and alcohol, addiction is more likely if you start earlier. Do you think that that is the same with technology? And what about tech addiction? Is that real? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't use the word addiction because I'm an early childhood researcher and we don't have addiction in early childhood. But I'm not going to argue that addiction shouldn't be a term that we use. There's a lot of controversy between media researchers about whether we should or shouldn't use that term. I feel like we should avoid the infighting and probably just decide to study the processes that lead up to such problematic media use that people want to call it addiction. What I'm interested in is all the pathways that lead up to that really heavily problematic media use where kids just feel so compulsive about using, that kids feel so attached to it that it makes them anxious when they leave their phone at home. So those pathways are there's so many potential. It could be social anxiety. It could be having a lot of distress and conflict at home. It could be a kid who has, you know, early ADHD and trouble with his executive functioning and paying attention. So they really crave all of the attention management that persuasive media does. There is some early research that some of the most problematic media habits in early childhood are really characterized by, number one, it starts to just displace so much other important activities. So sleep, family time, physical activity, getting outside. The other thing that is concerning to early childhood clinicians is when they use, parents use media a lot to calm kids down. Like, it becomes the go-to thing that we grab for child distress, for child boredom, for a child who's just skinned their knee in the park and, you know, otherwise needs a parent to just help them calm down rather than using an external regulator to help them calm down. So, again, this is all in, like, really, really early stages. And I think what I want to emphasize, though, is that one of the reasons I don't really focus on, like, a clinical addiction is that that's one end of the spectrum of the really severe issues that some kids have developed with technology. There's so much other subtle stuff that is going on with these little nudges that persuasive design does to us that might affect the way we consume information, that might affect the way we decide to, like, fragment all of our time when we're around our kids because we just feel this compulsion to check our email or check the news. And I think that those little subtle interruptions, those little subtle influences on our behavior is also an extremely important thing to study. Last week at the Truth About Tech conference with the folks from the Center for Humane Technology, I think that is a large emphasis of their work and their interest on making sure that, you know, methods of democracy or the way we make decisions, informed decisions about politics, about health, about other things, are not being slowly and subtly changed without us realizing it just based on some design choices that were meant for advertising but now have been kind of co-opted for other ideologies.
So I still use Facebook, and I asked about questions that my friends had. Many of them are moms, and they had many, many, many questions. And one was the link between the lack of empathy and screen time. Like, I know there have been some studies there. I don't know if they're widespread. What are your thoughts on the link, that link?
There's not a lot. I have done one study that's going to be published soon, looking at the fact that when parents are using tech a lot during parent-child activities, they have a harder time thinking about their child's emotions, their child's motivation. So that's an aspect of empathy. It's called being mind-minded about other people or being able to mentalize what other people are going through. So that has to do with more the parent-child relationship. There have been studies in adolescents or young adults showing that when a phone is on the table during a conversation, they feel like they got less deep into conversational topics. They felt a little bit less empathy or connectedness with the person across from them. And then there's one study in early childhood that showed that the earlier technology, such as television, videos, or mobile devices were introduced, the harder the harder time kids had when they reached preschool age with theory of mind tasks. Now, theory of mind is part of empathy. It's how we think about other people's thoughts and motivations and ideas. So there's a little bit of research. I wouldn't say that technology is the only cause of any kind of empathy deficit or difficulty we have with relating to one another. And I'll go back to that idea of, you know, grabbing technology whenever we're bored or distressed, because those are those moments that are really important for our own emotional development, to be able to sit through and sit in and handle and figure out what to do, either if it has to do with our own emotions or our kids' emotions. Kids learn empathy by watching us respond to their emotions, be able to control our own emotions when they're kind of triggering us or riling us up, and then we kind of contain what they're feeling and say, okay, I think this is what you're going through. Let me help you handle it. That is a big part of developing empathy in early childhood. I have theoretical reasons to feel like when we are interrupting a lot of emotion regulation with grabbing a mobile device to calm us down or distract us, that we're missing out on those interpersonal opportunities for developing empathy. I still don't have research on that, but it's something that I'm kind of working on, and hopefully we'll have results in the next couple of years.
We also had another question about toys versus tools, which is a big one. And I think like something like Minecraft, which is a great tool for learning, is there a way that that can also be problematic for some kids?
I love Minecraft. You know, my kids play it. I think it's, I like it because it's not very gamified. It is really unstructured. So the child is given a wide range of things to work with. And the affordances of Minecraft allow the child to really do a vast variety of different things. So that's kind of why I like it. I like more unstructured apps like the Toca Boca apps. Mm-hmm. I like some of the coding apps, you know, that really are more about the child figuring out what to do rather than, you know, the apps I hate are the ones that are just closed loop. Here, match the letters, match the numbers, you know, do this little task that the app is telling you to do. I've had patients, you know, who have ADHD or might have autism spectrum disorder. Like, this is my clinical specialty. So some of those kids have a really hard time transitioning from a highly preferred activity. And media is a highly preferred activity for lots of kids. It's immersive. It's satisfying to be able to create all these cool things. And it's hard to transition away from. So that's probably where parents describe the most kind of tantrums and conflict in their family, is just setting limits around media. When I started to let my 8-year-old play, I made a rule that, you know, he could like build up the amount of time he was playing based on positive behaviors during the week. I was using it as a reinforcer. And then at the end, he had to show me what he had created, so that always now he sees Minecraft as this thing that he shares with the people in his family, instead of it being his own little world that he kind of escapes to. So there are ways to use Minecraft in positive ways. I do recommend to most families of young kids that they not do a public server where they're going to be interacting with people they don't know. You know, if you're going to do a server, make sure it's just people that you're connecting with that are known to you, so it's private.
Dr. Radesky, I could sit here and ask you questions for the next 3 hours. Thank you so much. So your research, where's the best place for people to go to follow all the work that you do?
Yeah. So I have a Twitter account, but I'm lousy at it. I'll start tweeting more of my studies, I promise. But if you just Google me and look at my University of Michigan website, I have a lot of my research posted there. And there will be some YouTube videos posted from last week's conference, the Truth About Tech conference, which I think my session where we were talking about all these early childhood issues and the addiction issues was a good snapshot of some of the health concerns and the developmental concerns. And so, you know, I'm always willing to come back and talk more about the American Academy of Guidelines too, because I feel like parents stress out about this so much. And I'm always eager to, like, you know, keep answering questions. It comes up like every day in clinic. So happy to come back anytime.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Okay.